Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
So, new music, too. Threw me off a little bit.
Tis the season, I guess.
Tis right? The season, though. We're extending Halloween on this show. Halloween's Monday. We're celebrating Halloween today and all weekend, of course. But there is no denying that Eilish is the veteran on this show.
Absolutely.
I would go as far as saying that centerpiece on multiple iterations of the show.
Fair to say.
But the fact that she is the veteran has never been more evident after the most strategic off day placement of all time. Last night's game was not only 10:30 start, but the lone 10:30 start on the schedule for the Maple Leafs this season, thus avoiding the grind of grinds. But as much as she's a veteran, my buddy Brent Gunning here is a gamer. He stayed up. He grinded through.
I did.
He's here to talk about the Maple Leafs 4-3 loss. The San Jose Sharks in overtime. Gunnar, how's it going, buddy?
Can I complain about the 10:30 start for a second here? Can we do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you may.
First things first, I feel like I'm Michael Scott giving Toby his exit interview in the office. It's like, who do you think you are and what gives you the right, NHL, to make me stay up until 10:30? Yeah. I get it, local times, but I don't, on the other hand. How many people in the great state of California, I guess. I was about to say the great state of San Jose, but that's not a thing. But guess what? No one out there is listening because they're not expected to be up and at them at 6 a.m. like I am, like you are, and like everybody driving around listening to us is right now. So just how dare you, NHL? We're done. It's over with. I don't have to think about this again for this year, but mark this down on the calendar. Whenever we get the schedule next year, I will be complaining the day after a 10:30 start. How dare you? What gives you the right? But other than that, I'm great. The Leafs lost.
Boom.
They stayed up till
roasted.
Boom. I stayed up until 1 a.m. The Leafs lost, and I'm here. So one of those things is very good. Thrilled to be here. Happy to be talking. Did not like my lack of sleep. Did not like my lack of a Leafs win.
So I took a different approach. I'm taking this responsibility, morning show host, a little bit differently.
Okay.
The late games. I'm bringing something new to the table, and I think everyone should go with it. The PVR is a beautiful thing. PVR is a wonderful, wonderful thing. I saw zero commercials. I watched a 60-minute game in about 75 minutes. I did wake up at 3 a.m. to do it, but I got to bed early. Didn't waste my time with, you know, worried about what the result might be. I kind of knew what I was getting into at 3 a.m., a little coffee. That's what I did for Vegas at the start of the week. That's what I did for the Sharks last night. And we'll see if it pays off. It was okay on Monday. We'll see if it actually pays off today. But we have a great show. No A-list. Just a warning, fair warning to everyone. We're not going to do an A-list because a C-list, that seems too on the nose. So no A-list, but we got Charles really, Davis.
We have all the beginnings of the alphabet covered between you, Eilish, and myself.
I guess we could have done B-list, right. And honestly, that feels more appropriate, but we're going to have a little Halloween fun in the 6:30 block instead, and we got Charles Davis and Mark Messier.
Just quick little primer on that. I am a giant wuss when it comes to Halloween. Like, my whole, like, youth is marked by...
Really?
I'm going to go to a sleepover. Like, it's a Halloween party, and we're going to watch a terrifying movie, and I'm just like, I'm so scared right now. I'm pretty sure the Blair Witch Project is just footage of me trying to make it through watching Halloween movies. I am the biggest wuss when it comes to Halloween.
Could you, like, handle trick-or-treating? Could you...
Oh.
Was there a threat out there?
No. I'm a big guy, you know. I own my space out
individual.
There. In the actual world at large, great. I got no issues with that. Creepy crawlies, snarks, bumpkins, things that go bump in the night. I want no parts of that. Your Freddy's, your Jason's, other Halloween movies that I haven't watched. So yeah.
Scared. So you won't be hanging out in any haunted houses this weekend.
Could not pay me.
We're gonna do the sports version of Halloween.
My sports life's scary enough.
We're going to do sports nightmares. We're going to do real life athletic Freddy Krueger's. That's the 6:30 block. So that should be fun to go over. Maybe more scary than anything Halloween could potentially produce. But we will start with the Leafs. Again, a 4-3 loss. Erik Karlsson in overtime. Vintage.
He's so good.
Erik Karlsson. It's actually kind of nice to see. Like, I don't know if he was the best player in the world for any prolonged period of time. It might have been a couple months. Might have been a couple weeks. It might have been in the middle.
The moment that he launched that saucer pass that somehow did not scrape the scoreboard in Boston, was it? And it landed flatly on the stick of Mike Hoffman. He went and scored one of the most beautiful goals. Whenever that was, in that two-week, two-month, however you want to stretch it, in that span, I will absolutely hear the argument that he was the best player on the planet.
There was a moment in time. It might be for the 10 seconds in which that play took, but he was the greatest player in the world. And that was sort of wedged between, like, Crosby, Ovechkin, and this new era with McDavid and Matthews taking over. But it's nice to see, even though it came at the expense of the Maple Leafs, that he still has something. It is hockey purgatory, San Jose.
Oh, boy.
And that's part of the reason why this loss is not so great. But the fact that he can still do his thing is at least a little bit uplifting for me. But let's start with the Leafs. Let's start with the story of the game. What's like the big takeaway, the thing that you're gnawing on right now after watching the Leafs drop another game on this extended road trip, but at least salvage a point?
Just more listless hockey. You know, it's so easy to point to the very start of the game. And I can only imagine how many people who are going to be listening to us today saw that debacle 10 seconds into the game and said, it's already 10:50. I'm just going to go to bed right now. That's enough for me. And I, quite frankly, could not blame you if that was the approach you took. If I wasn't doing it for work, might have taken the exact same approach myself. And I love watching the Leafs, but it's just more listless hockey. They had moments where they looked like the high-flying Leafs of old. Of course, the Marner goal. It's like a tick, 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 tic-tac-toe goal that he scores there. Matthews bomb from the point. And you expect those to be, you know, especially the Marner one at the tail end of the period, and you expect these to be these moments that give the team life and give them some bounce. You know, there are many things that can kind of raise your station in an NHL game. Sometimes it's a big hit. Sometimes it's a fight. Sometimes it's a big momentum turning shift. And they had two or three of those moments, specifically the goals scored by Marner and Matthews, and they just weren't able to turn that into any sustained positive momentum. So it's just the general listlessness I've seen, and it's just been such a pattern for this team over this, well, I was going to say this stretch, but it's the stretch called the 22-23 season.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, because we've been waiting for things, right? We've been waiting for maybe a shift here or there, a moment, something from that top line that turns something, that turns the page. And I thought you nailed it with, okay, the Mitch Marner goal. Well, that came kind of out of nowhere, and that could really be something to build on, even though I guess some of the momentum was halted going into the intermission. But I think most specifically, we've been waiting for Austin Matthews to shoot the puck into the back of a net. And yeah, he's got one goal coming into last night's game, but it was a tip. It required an additional deflection and even wrote up a goaltender's shoulder before going into the back of the net. Like, we just haven't seen Austin Matthews be Austin Matthews yet. And I think the assumption was that once Austin Matthews did an Austin Matthews thing, then the floodgates would open and it would become the Maple Leafs that we expected this season, which is riding on the back of Austin Matthews and on that and that top line. But when he scored that goal, it was almost the response that we expected wasn't necessarily there. Now, it was a pretty good third period for the Maple Leafs. They had their opportunities to win the game in regulation, let alone go to overtime. But it wasn't as though they seized control of the game in that moment. And I was expecting it to be, I was expecting something to ignite once Austin Matthews finally had his moment. And yet it was the same old Maple Leafs team that's just kind of trying to figure things out and really not asserting themselves from shift to shift, from night to night. And that's really why they're in the position where they're in, where they can't separate themselves from a team that is one of the worst in the NHL. And now they're just kind of hovering in the middle of the Atlantic Division, winning one, losing one, and just not really gaining any ground. I thought this would be the turning point. It wasn't, at least in the moment.
And you, again, you look at it, this was always the murderer's row trip, right, of all these tough West Coast teams, and it's not that way anymore. This is where you're supposed to go find a little bit of money. You're supposed to go out. You're supposed to have some fun in the sun, play a little golf, hit the casino, and grab 5 or 6 points that are available to me out here on the West Coast.
Yep.
And that's just not been the way it's been. And, you know, this is his, like, grumpy sports radio guy as it gets, but to get the extra day in Vegas after the debacle. The team stayed in Vegas. Now, I understand these plans were made months ago by, the old George Costanza rule, like the traveling or the assistant to the traveling secretary booked the trip and they understand the way it's going to be.
Yep.
But to have a bad performance against Vegas, stay the extra day, you get the reward of, okay, we're still in Vegas. And then you go out and have that performance again. It just, you keep expecting this team to show you who they are. And I'm starting to worry they are, but it's not the group I thought they were. And that, it's just really concerning. And you mentioned the Matthews thing. He is so badly trying to get it going. You know, this little, we all think, of course, the signature Austin Matthews move is the quick kind of curl and drag shot. And that is his signature move. But the other one he loves is when he comes down the right wing and he tries this spinorama to get by a defenseman. And this is back-to-back games he's tried it. Now, I think he's just trying it because it's what presents it to himself, or it's what is available to him, but it's got shut down both times. Carlson just easily slapped it away last night, and you see these moments where he says, okay, if I can just score one of these highlight reel mojo goals, but it didn't even come when he had that absolute bomb last night, and you thought it would have been. So it is exceptionally frustrating. The one line that's been carrying the mail for this team in Nylander and Tavares, they've looked a touch less dangerous over the last little stretch here. You know, I thought Tavares was not nearly as dominant last night as he's been in the past to start the season. So it's just concerning that as you were watching the start of the season unfold, you could say to yourself, okay, Nylander and Tavares are going. It's only a matter of time until 34 and 16 join them. And now you're starting to see some signs of it for sure from that top line. Still nowhere near what you would like, but you're starting to lose the dominance you had got out of that second one.
I'm going to give Tavares and Nylander a pass for last night. Not necessarily going to be as lenient moving forward here this weekend, but after Tavares took that off the knee, I'm sure the knee was throbbing a little bit.
Maybe miracle he didn't miss time, it felt like.
Miracle he didn't miss time, but also Nylander wasn't good. And Nylander's been fantastic to this point, was not good, probably the Maple Leafs' worst player versus the Sharks. Probably connected in some ways to Tavares, but I'll give them one pass because what we were talking about it maybe yesterday, the day before, you can pencil in 10 bad games for Nylander. You can pencil in 10 games where he's the difference maybe in a win, like he's going to be that good. And the other games, we know we're going to get a really solid performance from him. There might be a frustrating moment, but from shift to shift, largely he's going to produce. And I think this was one of those 10 games for William Nylander. To your point earlier on being in Vegas and then being in California and having this time and being a long early season road trip where you can bond, you can do things outside of the rink. It's easy to connect the dots on, hey, that was a bad start. And it was a bad start for the Maple Leafs because they weren't ready. And we do this, they weren't on time, they weren't ready. Mike Babcock, Sheldon Keefe, it doesn't seem to matter. They always have these starts from period to period. It was so obvious in Vegas. It was obvious again versus San Jose. The fact that they were scored on as early as they did on the play that they did was frankly embarrassing and reason to go to bed. Was it Justin Hall's fault? Was it Austin Matthews' fault? Was it a combination of the two? Yeah, but it is embarrassing, and frankly, it should never happen what happened, where you're just getting beaten to a puck and you were leaving your third string goaltender out to dry and having to force him to make a save he didn't make, but a save that he shouldn't make, because that's not how you ease a goaltender into a game. So it is a failure on the defense's part. That's also a failure on Austin Matthews, who, you know, if the goals aren't coming, you got to at least put that effort in, and it isn't too early to criticize him now, even though he did score, even though he has played relatively well. He's not performing at a level like, say, Connor McDavid, who can lug his team through difficult stretches like he did last night, scoring a hat trick, his second of the year. It just hasn't been the same yet from Austin Matthews, the same level, the same standard, and him not getting to that puck and allowing Logan Couture to get that puck is one illustration of that.
If William Nylander, and I realize that if William Nylander scored 60 goals, we'd talk about him in a very different light too. I understand the moving goalposts here, but can you imagine if that was William Nylander, the way we would talk about it? Everyone is tisking Austin Matthews, rightfully so, and I don't think you need to make a mountain out of one mistake that a player made, but it is so indicative of being unready to start. And I think for a player like Matthews, sometimes I would imagine you just assume the start of the game is going to go kind of easy for you. You're a really skilled player. You assume you're going to win the draw. Morgan Riley's going to snap that thing up, and all of a sudden you're off and running, and it doesn't go that way, and you're just completely caught flat-footed, and that's what it looked like last night. And, you know, Justin Hall, I don't want to turn every single game into a referendum on him, but a rough night last night. He has that play off the start, and then he ends up eating the minor for shooting the puck over the glass there. Just a rough night for him, and for a guy who... There are other players who are allowed to make mistakes and they just kind of go by the wayside. Justin Hall, William Nylander, these are not guys who have that luxury.
Yeah.
Every mistake they make, there are eyeballs trained on it, and it's just to be caught in kind of two big moments last night. Rough night for him. And then I do quickly want to pick up on the thing you mentioned about McDavid. He's already had a couple of these moments. I believe that's his second hat trick of the season already for McDavid. He had the other one on opening night or really early on in the season. And again, I am not saying Austin Matthews has to go score a hat trick every night, but it'd be really nice to see the Hart Trophy winner put the team on his back and go win a game kind of single-handedly, like we have seen already happen with the guy he is constantly compared to in McDavid. And, you know, again, this isn't time to panic or time to worry about, oh, what exactly is Austin Matthews a player? He's one of the best five players in the NHL is exactly what he is. We don't need to worry about that, but it's just... it's time. One of these guys needs to have a game like that. And then lastly, the third string goalie part of this is just incomprehensible, that you would start a game with that guy, put him in that position. And then some of this is, you know, poor decision making, bad luck, but you take two penalties on the same play and you force him to kill off a 5-on-3 for 2 minutes, which, what do we always say? Your best penalty killer has to be your goaltender. And there's no way he can live up to that, even with a team like the Sharks.
Yeah. The Sharks goals came on two breakaways, I suppose, if you want to call Logan Couture a breakaway, kind of like a broken play, but literally point blank. Two on the power play, and of course what Erik Karlsson did on a breakaway in overtime. So it's not necessarily, you don't put it all on Sjogren, but did you do everything you could to give him the best chance to win? Not even close. And I don't fire up the deserve to win meter. In fact, I hate the deserve to win meter. And I don't even think it would. I don't even think the Leafs would rank fairly high on the deserve to win meter. That is difficult to say too many times. But it did feel a little unlucky, especially that that 5-on-3. You don't normally see two penalties called when they're both not necessarily egregious. When you do see it, it's like, oh, well, you high stick them. We can't really give you the benefit of the doubt, but it's something we don't often see, but it did happen. The Maple Leafs failed in that moment to pick themselves up. And that's another theme, is their failure and inability to overcome these certain moments, things that pop up over the course of games and seasons. They wilt rather than rise to the occasion, and giving up two goals on a 5-on-3 that happened under less than ideal or even unlucky circumstances is just another example of a failure to overcome a situation in the game that did prove to be very, very important.
You nailed it. I saw the deserve to win meter just gives me PTSD from the Canadian division. And it's like, look how bad the Leafs pasted the Canucks tonight. Now, why'd they lose? Can you answer me that one? Why did they lose? I hate to see that. The deserve to win meter only comes out when you're losing a game that you should be winning.
Exactly.
And it's like, guess what? I have eyes. I can see that.
And that's probably why we didn't see it, because San Jose may have deserved that one, at least a 50-50 share of that game. Let's stick with Marner and Matthews and the lineup change.
Yes.
How do you think Alexander Kerfoot fared on the top line with those two last night?
Fine. This is a guy who I have a lot of time for Alex Kerfoot as a player. I think on a team without a lot of jerks, when there are playoff games, he turns himself into one and is that kind of crotchety figure that you need in games. I think he's a piece who can be really useful up and down the lineup. But we all know who the best fit of this team on that wing is. It's Michael Bunting. I completely understand shaking it up. I completely understand the way things have gone. Sheldon Keefe, not just, okay, open the door. Let's go see what the big boys have in them. You have to give it a new look. I didn't mind Kerfoot there, but given the type of player that is effective on that, we go back to Zach Hyman, we go back to Michael Bunting. It is not the role that Alex Kerfoot succeeds. And so I don't like him as a fixture on that line. I understand shaking it up. You know, maybe Yarncroke makes a touch more sense to me there, but I haven't liked the offensive touch he's showing outside of when he scored a couple of goals. Playing with Austin Matthews in the preseason, mind you, but I haven't really seen much offensive touch from him. So it's frustrating because you don't want to reward the way it's looked, but it really feels to me like Bunting's the only option there, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, so we began nitpicking Austin Matthews. I don't think you can nitpick Mitch Marner's game. I thought he was very good. I wish he would stop complaining to the referees every game. Just play. It would be my advice, but obviously he's not taking that. But I think Alexander Kerfoot did do a fairly decent job presenting himself as a target and being the fulcrum between Matthews and Marner, or in one case, Marner and David Camp. I think he did a very good job just sort of putting himself in a position, creating an outlet, and allowing the play to continue in a positive way. Two of the goals were scored because Alexander Kerfoot had a great touch on a pass that, and a play that Marner was creating, both on the Camp goal and, of course, on Marner's goal. Alexander Kerfoot was instrumental in those moments. I don't know if the change sparked something elsewhere in the lineup. I think Bunting played well in the first period. I don't think that really lasted. As expected, that third line, which is maybe the weirdest ever put on paper by Sheldon Keefe with Bunting, Yarncroke, and Dennis Malgin, I don't think it really did anything. It kind of just screams replacement level, which is not what you're looking for when you think you have advantages with your depth. But I think Kerfoot was up to the task, and maybe you at least sent that message to Bunting, and he had a little bit of something, even if it faded on that line. I want to ask you about what we should do with the lineup, because I think I've been really, really frustrated with David Camp's usage. He does lead the team in goals, I believe. He's got more than
at least five on five, yeah.
He's got three. And it's like they just are taking it for granted in a way. They're taking, not that he deserves to be in the top six and that he's a goal scorer all of a sudden. No, he's not that, but he's your fifth best forward. I'm pretty confident in saying that he's your fifth most, maybe not best forward, but most reliable forward.
Impactful, yeah.
And useful, maybe
yeah,
useful.
Yeah,
fifth most
verb.
Useful forward is what I'm going to go with. And yet you continue to put him on the fourth line, saddle him with sandbags that he has to carry around the entire game, whether it is that reinforcement fourth line or it's Zach Aston-Reese and Nick Obey-Kubel. However you want to orchestrate it, it seems like he's not being put in a position to be his most impactful. And I feel like they're trying to make this a dominant four-line team, and it's not working. They don't quite have the horses to do that. And the best approach would just be to put your nine best forwards within the top nine, your best combination with that, and just roll with it and see if someone can rise to the occasion in the fourth line. And for you to have your best nine forwards playing in the top nine, David Camp is centering your checking line. And right now he's playing against top competition with fourth line guys, and that's just putting it, it almost underscores how effective he is because they're surviving it. But you shouldn't be trying to survive Camp minutes. You should be trying to put him in a position where he can win those minutes at the greatest degree that you can. And right now, I think you're just trying to make everyone useful when really in actuality, if you have nine useful forwards, you're in a good spot and you should just roll with them.
Yeah, to me, it goes down. The Camp problem comes down to two guys who are not him. It comes down to Yarncroc and it comes down to Pierre Engvall. If you felt like you were a little more certain what you were going to get out of those players on a night-to-night basis, I think it's pretty easy what you do with your check-in line, quite frankly. David Camp, the one thing, he has come completely as advertised, with one exception. He has way more offensive touch. I won't say talent. Like, this is not a sniper. I know he has the three goals this year, but he is a player who is able to connect plays between other skillful players. He has a little bit of that knowing the right place to stand, knowing where to be. So I like a world where you have him with Kerfoot on a checking line because, like we just talked about, Kerfoot, it's a fast player. He's a little wiry. He's a little angry. Mm-hmm. He can be a pest, but he also has some offensive touch and a lot of speed. We go back to what worked so well with Camp last year. Speed on the wings, Engvall on one side, Mikheyev on the other. So if you can channel whatever you found in Pierre Engvall when that check-in line was going so well, I do like him on the right flank with then Kerfoot on the left side and Camp kind of centering things. The only other option to me is Yarncroke, but I haven't liked the consistency I've seen out of him. But the world where he's your fourth line center and it's okay, you're out there with Simmons and Clifford tonight or Obey-Kubel and Aston-Reese, no. Like it is not the right usage for this team. And I've liked Aston-Reese, but I like him as your fourth liner when he's getting, 10 minutes a night. And I want David Camp to have more of an impact than that on this team. So that's what I'd do.
Yeah, I want to see Camp third line with Yeah, like I even think it'll help Engvall if you put him next to.
It's
again,
just it's always just about
guy.
It's just about turning him into something he's not with Engvall, and it's is he going to be 6'5" and lean on people, and he's never going to do it, and it's just going to always frustrate you in that spot, especially if you have him now. I think if you have when you have Mikheyev there, not that he was a bruiser, but you just had more size. But I think if you have two smaller players in Kampf and whoever the other winger is, you need that presence to be a physical one, and we've tried it. We've tried. I don't know what else you could try with Engvall. It's never happening.
Yeah, other than put him with David Kampf this year. Yeah. Kampf, Engvall, Kerfoot may work. Yarncroc on the top line sounds right to me. And maybe that means Michael Bunting's demoted to the fourth line and you let him work his way back up the lineup. Because if there is one guy, I think, who's majorly underperforming, maybe it's Pierre Engvall, but the expectation isn't that. The expectation is pretty high for Michael Bunting despite how much he gets paid and all that stuff. But he was a top-line guy who was undeniably effective with Mitch Marner and Auston Matthews last year, and now he's trying to get that spot back.
And one last thing on last night's game. I don't know how we haven't talked about this yet. I've never seen a game with shooters the way that this team has missed the net that much. The boards are no longer in existence. My ears are still ringing from how loud it was off the board. I've never seen a team with that much talent miss the net by as much as they did last night. It was unbelievable, unfathomable.
Yeah, it's understandable if you got Cody Ceci in the bubble throwing it off.
That's exactly what I thought of. There's never been a more egregious miss net in the world than him missing it by 10, 15 feet wide.
One of my favorite Cody Ceci moments, for sure.
We'll get your top five before the day is done.
Oh,
the other four.
Oh God. We are getting into sports nightmares later. So, that might not be difficult. I want to ask you later about a quote from Elliot Friedman in the intermission. An interesting turn of phrase, I thought, on the panel was just that Matthews has been experiencing a descent into weirdness. So we'll talk about Auston Matthews a little bit later. I think that was an interesting quote, maybe hyperbole a little bit, but I think an interesting quote and something to at least consider. So I'll let you chew on that for a little bit. Let's quickly get into the Thursday night football game. I gave up on this. I laid out my strategy here with games for the Maple Leafs, so I had to give up on this. But I gave up on it partly because I was a Ravens bettor who was a little salty at the fact that Tom Brady continued to look washed, but was figuring out a way to pick apart a Ravens defense, and Lamar Jackson looked worse than a washed Tom Brady. But that game flipped on its head when I hit the pillow because the Ravens dominated the second half, ended up winning comfortably 27-22. I think it was a late score from the Bucs that made it at least look respectable. But it's pretty clear that Tom Brady's done. And you are a New England Patriots fan. You might be more of a Tom Brady New England Patriots fan.
Very true.
So I wonder, because I said on the show last week that I am a Tom Brady hater. I loathe Tom Brady in a lot of ways. I hated watching him dominate the NFL for as long as he did. And yet I don't find this at all enjoyable. I don't like watching this player who should have had the perfect career throw away the idea of a perfect career by going through this season and lay out so plainly that he should retire right now. He should retire before he gets on a flight to Germany. I don't know if they're playing in a couple weeks or this week, but they're going to Germany. He shouldn't be on that flight. He should leave the Buccaneers behind right now. Are you having trouble experiencing this chapter of Tom Brady's career?
The problem I'm having is actually picking up the shovel to shovel dirt on him, because now it's never looked quite this bad. But how many times have we had the week 6, week 8 conversation over the past couple of years of, I don't know, are we sure he's still? And then guess what? He's still Tom Brady. But this is the worst it's ever looked. It does look like he's done, but because he has pulled the rabbit out of his hat, found the fountain of youth, his sleep pajamas, his concussion water, whatever else is going on in Brady land, that he's found some way to turn it around, I cannot pour dirt on him. But this is as bad as it has ever looked for him. And lastly, I would say, you talking about being a Brady hater, that's basically exactly how I feel about Peyton Manning. So what I wouldn't have given for him to have looked as bad as he looked on that Broncos team, but on a bad team. What I just wouldn't have given for that.
But Peyton had that, though.
I know, but with the Broncos, at least he got his Super Bowl, to go out. I would have just loved him to have been doing it for like a Cardinals team that was awful or something.
It's amazing how they kind of suffered the same fate, and I never, ever thought Tom Brady would... Again, I never the amount of people who have been trying to predict the downfall of Tom Brady, the list is endless, and it's been going on for the last decade.
Uh-huh.
And then finally this year, I think people stopped, and then it happened.
Yeah, it's so true. The second everyone was like, okay, we'll just wait for it, and then it happened.
And it's not only that he's playing bad, but that team is awful. They are not good defensively. Everything about what's happening in Tampa
Bay. Bribing refs with autographs or golf lesson phone
golf
numbers,
lessons,
whatever.
Exactly.
Okay. Well,
and all of a sudden, the Atlanta Falcons might win a division title with Marcus Mariota, which is truly crazy. Quickly, World Series opens tonight, finally. Houston Astros haven't lost yet. Philadelphia Phillies are as true of an underdog story, I think, as there could be. In Major League Baseball, they were lucky to get into the postseason. They went on a pretty remarkable run, beating the Cardinals, Braves, and now Padres. I guess they didn't have to go through the Dodgers, but still a pretty incredible story. What's the level of intrigue for you with this series?
Fired up for it. There's some actual like heroes on the Houston side, which I can't believe I'm about to say, but it's like, I am a huge Verlander guy who's going to get the ball tonight. Fired up to see him pitch. The fact that Dusty Baker's been there, I think there's some compelling storylines, but I do continue to think it is an affront to the game of baseball that this Phillies team is four wins away from a World Series championship. They booted all over the place. They get some timely hits. There's a lot to like about them too. Like, that fan base is awesome. Harper's been incredible. I have loved Kyle Schwarber going back to when he was doing this exact thing for the Cubs team that broke their curse. So there's storylines, there's intrigue, but I'll be honest, like the layoff kind of killed it for me. And look, they're going to play tonight. They're going to play all weekend. I'll be right back into it. But it was just way too long of a layoff. I was all hot and bothered to get some World Series going, and that was 5 days ago now.
I think it's going to be 3 weeks between games. I think the Jays played 3 weeks ago today. The Houston Astros have played 7 games. They've won all 7, but you played 7 games in 21 days for a baseball team. Is wild. I'm with you. I think there's a good story either way, and I don't think it's a story I necessarily thought I'd be cheering for on either side. But I kind of want to see Bryce Harper have his redemption moment. I guess he's had part of that, but the fact that he couldn't win and that the Nationals won without him, I don't know if it ever sat that well, and I don't know if he's the most likable guy. But I want to see him have his moment. But I also want to see Dusty Baker have his moment. And I'm actually all for the Houston Astros vindication story. I'm all for it. I think they were.
I'm not remotely, but that's nice.
Clearly they cheated, but everyone cheats. And clearly they have talent because they continue to do it.
For sure.
They continue to do it. And they're proving that they're in a remarkable.
I would like it if Dusty Baker brought back.
Single way.
I would like it if he brought back old school cheating. He's like, "We're having greenies today, kids. This is my boy Hank Aaron's secret recipe. Let's do it." That's just a joke. I'm not accusing many people's real home run king of greenie use or anything like that. Although he almost certainly was. Okay, there we go.
There are levels to it, I guess. So the text line is open. I'm going to wade into it. I mean, Ailish is the text line queen, of course. But it needs to be open because we need your wake and rake submissions for today. We're going to put together a parlay, as we do every day, at the end of the show, in the wake and rake presented by Unibet. And next, we're going to get to a couple different things Halloween related. One,
spooky scaries,
enduring nightmares, not haunted house related, not, you know, gunning, fighting for himself on the streets when he's trying to get candy. Enduring nightmares and lifelong scars for Toronto sports fans and personal Freddy Kruegers. So athletes that, you know, have been terrorizing in our lifetimes. We'll do that next.
Sportsnet 590, the fan. Bam, 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 bam.
We're a family that is too excited about the holidays right now. Do we have 2 straight days of Halloween music? We're bookending the weekend, all Halloween. And we promised Ailish we wouldn't do too much Halloween because she wants to do some Halloween on Monday, on Halloween.
What an idea to talk about the holiday on the holiday.
Yeah, but I mean, this must be the spirit is strong back there. And we got Halloween music instead of the A-list music because in lieu of the A-list, and of course, in the spirit of Halloween, we're going to go elsewhere. I don't know how many consecutive days on this show the A-list has been done, but there is no such Phil Kessel Ironman streak. It's over.
It's done.
No A-list today. Instead.
And fitting it would end with, she put it on her social media, so I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school here. Fitting it would end with her in Boston enjoying a Bruins game.
Yeah, there is something kind of fitting.
Serendipity.
That isn't there. It's a tough look. Tough look to be in Boston. Apparently she was caught on the Jumbotron, I think, and she was coaxed into chugging an alcoholic beverage. Like, there,
so
she became part of the story in Boston.
Did they know that's a Maple Leafs?
I don't think they do. I don't think they do. Maybe they're the ones that got kind of, exposed in
there
the moment.
There you go.
But,
overstepped.
Either way, no A-list. And instead, we'll do something Halloween related because we got the spirit here. We're all spirit of Halloween right now. We are going to go through our Toronto sports nightmares and our most notorious sports villains in Toronto, or AKA the Freddy Kruegers in our own personal worlds. We'll start off with Toronto sports nightmares. So these are things that actually have happened that still haunt us. And Gunning, we're all going to go through it. The guys who are throwing on the Halloween music, Josh and Daniele, are going to provide theirs as well. But Gunning, let's start with you.
Oh, I mean, where do I start? There's so many. I have a list here, and there's five from the last 2 years for the Leafs. But I'm actually going to take it back to my childhood my teenhood, I guess. Kasperi Kapanen's father, Sammy, he gets absolutely obliterated in overtime of a Leafs playoff game. And me sitting there. Now, much like in horror movies, there's a moment where I've been told, because I don't watch them, I'm a big wuss, but I've been told there's a moment where it's like, hey, things are going okay. Let me check out this room. It can't be too bad. And that was me when Sammy Kapanen got obliterated into the moon in that overtime. And I'm sitting there going, oh, this is great. I got bloodlust. This is awesome. And that lasted all of 4 seconds before Jeremy Roenick walked in and snapped it blocker side, I believe, ending the Leafs run that year. Overtime winner against the Leafs. He's doing his little dance, his JR strut.
The most haunting thing about that might actually be the sound.
Yes.
There was like the hooting and hollering.
There is nothing.
Him dancing.
There's nothing like
I remember those sounds.
A road overtime playoff goal is maybe, now not in this instance, I want to be clear, it's the worst sound ever. But in other instances, is the best sound in sports. The ping off the bar, a quiet crowd. Gives me chills in a bad way.
I also have one from childhood. I think that's actually fitting because that's probably where these nightmares originate for most people and continue throughout their adult life. I'm going all the way back to November 29th, 2000. I was just a boy, a child. The Toronto Maple Leafs hosting the St. Louis Blues. Meaningless game at Air Canada Center. Air Canada Center is all but a year old. I bled blue at that point. I was a big Leafs fan, and I haven't necessarily been the same since. They were a good team back then. They were going to conference finals. They were getting to the second round with regularity. It was all good. But that was a turning point for me because the Leafs led 5-0 with 15 minutes and 9 seconds left in the third period. Then there were goals from Chris Pronger, a guy named Alexander Kavanov, Al McInnes, who you'll probably remember, Michael Hanzus, and then Kavanov scores again. So it's 5-5 and 18 seconds into overtime. Jochen Hecht scores for the Blues to complete the comeback. There were tears that night.
No, no.
My mother consoled me that night.
That was nice.
And honestly, I've never looked at the Maple Leafs the same way since that moment when I was just a boy. That is my Maple Leafs nightmare. Boys?
That's rough. What do we got behind the glass? What do we got?
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are we doing?
Great to have Gunner in.
Fired
up. Excuse the vocal cords. Boy, are they in rough shape, let me tell you. Let me tell you.
Just screaming at those kids on the basketball court? What are we doing?
Well, you know, funny.
Bobby Knight over here.
Sheldon Keefe.
Funny, Gunner. Yesterday was an off day, too. So it's today's the day back on.
Grinding
so this
tape.
Is 2 days.
Poor kids.
Right? This is 2 days of no yelling in practice, but we'll see. Nonetheless, the one you mentioned, actually, Gunner, that moment there with Roenick, that was my number one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I'm
that.
Just saying. I
good
have,
pick, though.
I was a young child at the time, and I was crying, so I remember that vividly.
This is a therapy session for real.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with another one. I'm going to go with a basketball one, actually, because it was, I think, genuinely one of, I mean, there were a couple playoff moments from the mid-2000s that I recall from the Raptors, but the one that stands out to me the most amidst all their playoff appearances was the very first one back in, I think it was, what, 13, 14,
mm-hmm.
when they lost in Game 7 to the Nets, mm-hmm. and just Paul Pierce blocking Kyle Lowry to end that game. Game 7, one possession game, opportunity to win it, and Lowry gets blocked by Paul Pierce. And I remember that vividly because it was obviously it ends up being the start of something really special for that team, for this organization. But in the moment, it still hurt quite a bit.
Was that the year Masai Ujiri was the "we don't give a bleep yes. about it" year? Oh, okay, yes. That's what I thought.
He said it God, was before what? Game one where he said "F Brooklyn." Yes.
What a hype tape he cut. We should have known back then.
We should have known he had it.
Sandman.
All right. I'm actually surprised this fell to me. I have a huge list because I didn't think this would come to me, and I hate you guys for making me relive all of these different memories. But I can't get the image of James Reimer face down in his crease in 2013. That, I mean, it was kind of like the start of all of these awful postseason runs.
Yeah.
It was a different era, but it's still connected.
God. Like that image just, it haunts me. It absolutely haunts me.
Yeah, it's terrifying. See, it's funny. We're gonna switch to our Freddy Krueger's here. And
do you have another one?
Another? Oh, I mean, I'm just gonna quickly rhyme off my list that I wrote down here. Justin Hall pick penalty. John Tavares knee to the head. Matthews near miss in Game 6 of overtime last year. And then the one that hurts way more than it should. Alex Galchenyuk's blind pass against Montreal in Game 5. Here, why don't you just take a breakaway in overtime? Man, no biggie. Here you go. The team I used to play for. No sleeper agent involved there. Oh God. Galchenyuk. Everything we did for you, and that's how it ended. Ugh.
And
yeah, good luck.
Why does it feel reminiscent with Dennis Malgin? Like, is there a big mistake in his future?
Man. I won't.
Why
I
does
won't.
It feel like that?
Galchenyuk, I was allowed myself to get talked into. I won't do it with Malgin. There were a couple moments last night. He was on the power play, and I'm like, shifty. No, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it to yourself.
Slap
that's
your own
right.
wrist.
That's right.
Let me give you one Blue Jays one, and this could be Freddy Krueger. But do you remember the name Caleb Humphreys?
I do.
So that, for those who don't remember, that was the Royals fan who had the Khabib before Khabib Nurmagomedov had the Khabib. Whether it's there's no connecting mustache, it's just beard. And he's at the center of one of my personal Toronto sports nightmares because
when he lied to Aaron Andrews.
Yes, he did lie to Aaron Andrews. I forgot about it. I've been just trying to erase him from my memory. So maybe the most invested I've ever been in a single postseason run. For a Toronto sports team was the 2015 Blue Jays. That electrified the city like really none other until, of course, the Raptors won the title in 2019. But Game 6 on the road in Kansas City, Blue Jays facing elimination. Caleb Humphreys reaches over the wall to catch a ball off the bat of Mike Moustakas. Royals go up 2-0. It probably should have been called back. Blue Jays end up winning the game. They're a wild swing, so it wasn't because of that moment. It wasn't in the ninth inning. But I will always have the memory of him holding that ball up. That is a haunting image to me. That is a nightmare that I will continue to relive. Him smiling, the beard, the ball, the fact that the Blue Jays lost in Game 6 in Kansas City in their best chance to win a World Series in my, like, conscious lifetime. That is one of the enduring images for me. Caleb Humphreys, nightmare fuel.
And to just lie to excellent journalist Aaron Andrews like that. Where was your hand? It was totally right here and not over the fence. Okay, sure. We all have eyes.
I think that's a good segue because he could be a personal Freddy Krueger, but we're doing personal Freddy Kruegers as well. Basically, either athletes or figures who have haunted Toronto sports fans during their tenures. A lot of good choices here because there have been a lot of tormenting individuals, tormenting athletes, guys and girls who have destroyed the souls of Toronto sports fans. Gunning, who's your number one?
Going to give a quick little hipster pick before I give the actual number one. And both of these factored in the moment that Josh referenced of Bergeron scoring the OT winner. The soundtrack to a lot of my nightmares has been Jack Edwards. When I go to hell one day, he's going to be there screaming, "Stab the beast in the belly!" Like, it's just going to be ringing out in my ears. So he is not the guy, But he is like the wrestling manager for the guy. He's hyping him up. He's the pallbearer, if you will. Easy pickings for me. It's the Zdeno Chara. He was on those teams. He's tortured the Leafs forever. He treated Brian McCabe often like I treat my son when I'm wrestling with him, just picking him up, carrying him whatever he wanted in a fight. Could have done way more damage, but chose not to. He respect him, all that stuff. Sure. Zdeno Chara, it is so easy for me.
Boys, I'll go to you.
Okay, so I like the Gunnar goes with. I like you mentioned Jack Edwards. That is terrific.
That's honestly, that I don't think so I don't think good. We're going to beat that hipster pick. That's really good.
That's Jeff Merrick hipster style. That is so good.
Thank you.
Okay, I had a few on this one, but I'll go with Rugi. I'll go with Rougned Odor.
There you go.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest villains of the last 20 years in this city, at
I think
least.
He likes being the villain the most of
yes,
all the villains.
Yes, and he embraces it the most, no question.
And his powers are, like, timeless. Like, he's still doing
doesn't
it.
Matter.
And he's an awful baseball player now. It doesn't make any sense.
And he still tortures them every
walk
time.
Every
time. It doesn't matter who he's playing for. But then, obviously, going back, the iconic moments are with the Rangers, and we all came to know him in the 2015 ALDS. But then the year after, he comes out in, what was it, May of 2016, and punches Jose Bautista
what
in the face.
What a right hook.
Mm-hmm. And from that point on, he lives in infamy. So he is, I think he's for sure one of the top villains that this city has ever seen in terms of an opponent.
Yeah, I mean, hard to quibble with it. And again, the
it's
enduring.
It's like free space almost.
It is. The enduring haunting. Like, I can't just.
He's going to manage against the Blue Jays in a playoff series one day, right? You know that's happening.
Can't believe he can come off the bench for the Orioles and then plant the seed in your head that he might be the reason that the Orioles catch the Blue Jays and ruin this season. Like, you actually thought that was a possibility at a point this year. Josh, who's yours?
Gunnar actually took mine. I didn't think he'd go first, but he's been the longest running villain for the Leafs for a long time. I'm actually going to go with one of his teammates in Daniel Alfredsson. Like that feud, like him and Matt Sundin always kind of just faced off, and it was just that those days where the Sens were the Leafs' main rivals were great hockey, but Alfredsson, I never wanted to play him.
Brent Gunning at a tender teen year got way too offended about him faking throwing the stick after Sundin got suspended. I was like, how dare he? That is our captain. Don't let anybody kill him. Like the rage that took over my body. And in hindsight, it's like, they are friends and he told a little bad joke. Settle down.
The Leafs always got it over on the Senators, though. That's why it was never
exactly.
As bad. And like once... Not that the hair had anything to do with it, but like it was just like he kind of looked a little goofy out there when the Leafs are getting the better of Daniel Alfredsson.
I kind of hate how Austin Matthews' hair pops out of the helmet the same way. Can
no,
I be honest?
That's different.
It's not as curly, but I think of it. I do. I'll be honest. I'd be lying if I didn't.
I got another Bruin. Patrice Bergeron has to be on the list. He scored that goal that, you know, we're referencing with James Reimer face down. But he's the only one really who's been at the forefront, front and center for all three game seven disasters with Boston just owning Toronto in those moments. So he's on my list. And one more, LeBronto.
Yep.
Coined by Mark Jones in game two of the 2018 Eastern Conference Final. When he's grabbing the beer, spinning the ball, he's doing whatever he wanted to. He flat out terrorized the DeMar DeRozan-era Toronto Raptors. But hey, it forced them to change, which was nice.
Yeah,
I think LeBronto broke that version of the Raptors, and they changed. They got Kawhi. And, of course, the rest is history. Do we all feel better?
If I can I offer, like, a couple honorable mentions?
Yes,
of course.
Okay. Get in here.
Yeah, I wrote down a few for these. I was happy and excited about these. John Farrell. John Farrell.
Yeah, took his dream job. That's a really good one. That's a good one.
Took his dream job, left this city high and dry. Now, it ended up working out for us here in Toronto because John Gibbons came back and they made the ALCS for 2 years in a row, 15-16.
I still think he won that.
John Farrell won a World Series, and that hurts.
Isn't he like a fisherman now?
He is.
I think so.
He is. I mean, I have him in the old Rolodex. He's a guy.
Who don't you have in the old Rolodex, Daniele?
There are some that I wish I did, but I don't know. And the other one I wanted to mention is our old buddy, somebody that played here and had 15 minutes, literally, maybe of court time in total, Goran Dragic.
Oh, that's a good one.
Goran Dragic.
I like that as well.
He became the villain.
Turkoglu, obviously a longer run, but him just him feuding with Jack Armstrong. I'm just going to say ball. Him allegedly going out to nightclubs when he was not healthy enough to play for the team. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Honestly,
we now have the sleeper cells, the guys who played for Toronto sports teams and were undermining and sabotaging their ability to have any success. Send in your Freddy Kruegers. Send in your nightmare sports moments. We got a good one here. Freddy Krueger for David and Bradford is just Wayne Gretzky, 1993. As simple as that. That was pretty scary.
Yeah, it was.
Pretty scary stuff.
I'm surprised and you didn't add an addendum of Carrie Fraser there.
When a villain can get away with it, that makes it even scarier.
There you go.
And again, send in your wake and rake picks. We've got Charles Davis after the break. We'll talk about the Bucks, Tom Brady, his game this weekend, and headlines across the NFL world. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.